From all corners of the globe to your ears, it's the Midnight Movie Cowboys. Sometimes informative, sometimes controversial, but always unpredictable. It's the Midnight Movie Cowboys podcast with your hosts, Hunter, John, and Stu. And now, on with the show.
Right, welcome to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. You know what I mean, right? My name's Stuart Ball. Right, I'm from Northumberland Heath, yeah, and over there in Walthamstow is Hunter and his dog Jackie.
Yeah, all right then.
All right, and over there in Stoke-on-Trent is John Grace. Say hello.
All right, lads, let's go chase some birds.
Right, tell your dog to shut up. I'll put her in newspaper and make a fish and chips of her. You know what I mean?
Oh, Jackie, shut up, you right cunt.
Poor Jackie. She doesn't deserve that sort of treatment.
He clearly does not live in a Vietnamese neighbourhood.
No, doesn't, mate. If he did, she'd be number 33 with black bean sauce. Know what I mean?
I avoid the slant neighbourhoods for that reason.
Yeah. Right, anyway, enough of the fake British accents. If you haven't guessed, none of us are British here. I'm Australian and... The other two are Yanks.
Yep.
Like Colin Southern.
I'm not a Yank, I should say.
I like Colin Southern guys, Southerners Yanks, because it gets them very upset.
Yeah,
so
I mean,
bitch.
According to people from the Commonwealth, all Americans are Yanks, but you know.
No, they really are, like Yank tanks. What do we call big American cars, Yank tanks?
Never heard that, that's good.
You never heard that? Okay.
No. That is good. That's a very new one.
American muscle cars, they get called Yank tanks over here. So, yeah. So, anyway, in praise of all things British, because we love our British comedy shows and British films and our British friends and all that. And our mate Anthony Nesbitt. How you going, Anthony? All right, mate?
All right, mate.
He's from Liverpool, so he doesn't talk like that.
No, he talks like this, yeah? You know what I mean?
That's not Liverpool.
No, I don't mean.
Wait, no, that's...
Liverpudlian, it's pronounced.
Liverpudlian, the Beatles, yeah.
Yeah.
Jeff Walker from Carcass talks like that.
Jerry and the Pacemakers. No, I mean, mate. Yeah. Anyway, so this week, we put up a post on our Facebook page a few days back saying, just with a British flag, with a Union Jack up there, and nothing else. And people were guessing, but no one got close, and it was going to be tough always to get it right. People were saying about British films, and yes, while you would think that, I did say, look a bit more outside the box sort of thing. And so what we're doing this week...
Austin Powers.
Is Austin Powers, yeah. With a faux British spy, Mike Myers. Canadian Brit, yeah.
Wouldn't that be great to, this is our tribute to British cinema. Austin Powers.
Oh, that would be an absolute slap in the face. It really would. if you were dead serious about it.
A life less ordinary.
Yeah. Yeah, really.
We're doing a tribute to the cinema of India, the love guru.
Again, featuring Indian-Canadian Mike Myers.
Exactly.
Yeah. So, we are going to cover three British comedy shows, one of them being Hancock's Half Hour, the other being On the Buses, and the other is Love Thy Neighbour. Three very different shows. Well, two shows sort of similar. One show rather different. Both comedies, or all comedies, I should say, nonetheless. And our idea for this came from us throwing out about, what we're doing this week. Usual thing, And John mentioned You Are Awful, the Dick Emery movie, which is a very funny movie, but I actually don't own it, and it's hard for Hunter to find as well. But it did spark a conversation between us about, what about some British comedy shows? And it's like, doesn't really get covered a great deal, not that we know of anyway. So why not? So that's how we arrived at covering these ones. And I picked them because I have a better knowledge of British comedy shows than these guys do. Obviously, being over here in Australia, they were just everywhere on television in the 70s and 80s. So that was it. So yeah, I... picked, like I said, for us Hancock's Half Hour, On the Buses, and Love Thy Neighbour. And a particular episode, these aren't the best episodes of the lot. They were just sort of the higher-up ones. But what they were was a good indication of what the show itself was like. So let's get into the first one. If you guys haven't got anything else you want to bring up before we dive into it.
And now, let's just go into it.
This probably won't be listened to by Americans, so it wouldn't.
Well, I'd like to think that maybe it would, so they can get some sort of idea. Because these titles are available to buy from Amazon in the UK, and with your current dollar against the British pound, from what John told me, it's like nearly as cheap as buying a coffee in a Starbucks. So you do yourself a lot worse than buying these sets and diving
Thanks,
into these.
Thanks, Nigel. Comments. Farage.
God Emperor Nigel Farage.
Yes. The great troll
love
face
thy
himself.
Neighbor is, I should say Love Thy Neighbor is actually really expensive on Amazon right now for some reason.
Okay, well, it'll come down.
Maybe we'll create a demand. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah.
We always do.
Always. I mean, like I always do with Amazon stuff, just pop it in a basket, check it every day, make sure if it drops. If it does, I buy it. If it's a good enough price. If not, keep waiting. That's what you do. But, so we hope that American audiences in particular will generate some sort of interest in at least seeking these shows out and giving them a chance. You know, don't dismiss them because these shows are not of the current times. They are very different. I can assure you of that.
Yes.
As far as on a personal standpoint, I mean, I've been watching Love Thy Neighbor since, Jesus Christ, the early 80s, late 70s, same with On the Buses. Hancock I got into a bit later, around about the mid-90s. It wasn't very well known, never played on TV here. Unless it played on the Scum ABC, which I don't watch. I did find it via VHS tapes. And I'm old! they've played forever over here, so we were not sort of... you know, alienated from that sort of stuff. But yeah, okay, let's get into Hancock's Half Hour. Episode titled The Two Murderers. Hancock's Half Hour is a show featuring Tony Hancock, very tragic Tony Hancock, who died young and drank himself to death, basically. Unfortunately, he had a very, very bad drinking habit. Also features the great Sidney James, or Sid James, he was more commonly known, I should say.
Yes.
And an episode titled The Two Murderers. Now, unfortunately, with Hancock's Half Hour, it being so old, starting in the late 50s, I believe it was, mid to late 50s, the BBC did not preserve all these shows.
They weren't very good at that with their old shows.
They were horrible because they were all taped on video. They were kept for a little while. When they ran out of tape, well, we'd just pull out this old Hancock episode and scrub over that with a Doctor Who, but
they never thought that people would ever watch.
There was no archiving. Oh God,
it was just disposable content.
And people would give anything now to watch those old lost Hancocks. You know, same with Doctor Who, folks. I'm not a Doctor Who fan by any stretch, but you know, they find
a number of lost Doctor Whos.
Oh yeah, some guy like out in Argentina's got a tape of it, and it's like, oh, there's a feeding frenzy on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like I remember
in South Africa one time.
Yeah, so it would not surprise me.
Yeah, it's like when we would, back in the Cinema Slave days, Stu, that's like when I would tune out because Joe would start talking about like lost Doctor Who episodes, but just be like, oh, okay.
Oh, really. When are we going to get London After Midnight? Please, somebody must have it.
It'll show up in a basement.
On a sadder note, there's a sadder note about that, is most of the Sherlock Holmes starring Peter Cushing from the BBC TV show are gone. Only like four or five remain. They're on DVD. But those are long gone, wiped.
Yeah. And you think the BBC haven't copped a lot of shit for over the years for doing that? They have. There's a lot of pissed off.
And I heard things. It was a union. I heard at one point it was a union thing.
Gee, thanks, unions.
I can't confirm it, but I do remember reading that somewhere. Like, it was almost union required.
Wonderful. All right. So, anyway, the premise of this episode is... the premise of the show is Hancock and Sid lived together in a house in East Cheam in London. A fictitious suburb, doesn't exist. And they lived together. And the premise of this episode is that Tony Hancock has got his money. He's doing his annual count-up. And Sid walks in. Sid knocks on the door. Hancock hides his money in a box via a rope up the top of the fireplace. And Sid asks him about a business proposition of buying El Fish and Chippo, a fish and chip shop. Which made me laugh because, being over here and, of course, in England, fish and chip shops are just, like, everywhere.
And the banker's like, this sounds like a right good investment.
Yeah, for El Fish and Chippo. Sid offers a business proposition to Hancock about going into business with him to buy this fish and chip shop. Hancock refuses, and Sid becomes very upset and says, right, I'll get the money somehow. I'll find it. I'll get it some way. Doesn't say he'll get it off him, but he says, I'll get it some way. And fade to black, and it goes to Sid at a bank getting an overdraft on his account to buy into the fish and chip shop. Sid goes into the library to get some business books and also gets recommended by the librarian there a book called Perfect Murders of the 20th Century to take home and read. And next scene, you see Sid at the table reading the book Perfect Murders. Hancock walks in, asking if he's all right, are they okay, about refusing the offer to go into the fish and chip place. Sid, don't worry about it, goes to bed and leaves the book on the table. And Hancock finds it and says, Perfect Murders of the 20th Century. Then the story kicks in. Hancock's convinced that Sid's going to murder him for his money for the fish and chip shop. Walks around and starts carrying a rifle with him to protect himself around the house. And Sid's convinced somehow through a conversation that he's going to get... Oh, that's right. Hancock reads the book, Perfect Murders of the 20th Century, a portion of it. Sid overhears him outside the door, thinking he's going to get murdered by Hancock for his fish and chip shop. Hence the story of the two murderers and... a lot of distrust happens throughout the course of the episode. So, what do you guys?
A lot of hilarious coincidences.
Okay, at first Hunter was unsure if he was going to make it because you had a very busy week, and I said I really, really want to get you on here because you, being the younger of the three of us here, have a more of a generational gap between John and I, who are very, very close in age. I wanted to get your thought on a show this old. Hunter, I was wanting to hear from you first what you thought about this.
I mean, I thought it was a funny sitcom, you know. It's kind of your standard situational comedy, you know, but it's got that British sense of humor. That's what was different about it, and that's what kind of made it fresh for me.
Yeah.
With sort of, you know, their terms, their terminology, and just the culture they live in the house. But you know, I enjoyed all the coincidences. They're very well timed.
Yeah. And the interplay between Sid James and Tony Hancock is just masterful.
Yeah.
So like, brilliantly acted by those two.
Yes.
And what I should bring up as well is that those guys had a lot of dealing with each other, because a lot of these shows of Hancock were first radio plays. That was a big common thing in the 50s and 60s in the UK. Was our first radio plays then translated to television, or they, on the rare times, they would take a television script and translate it to a radio play as well to broadcast on the radio. So they were well versed in each other and how their comic styles were and everything as well. Unfortunately, Tony Hancock, though, he was very much an egomaniac, horrible one. My film school teacher, for the brief period I did film school, knew Tony Hancock when Hancock was out here in Australia making Terror Australis, which I think was 1963 or 1964, shortly before Hancock's death in the late 60s. And he said he was a very, very broken man, just horrible, chronic alcoholic, zero self-esteem, always doubting himself about his comic abilities. When I've read the book on Hancock written by his late wife, his widow, and he said, she goes, everybody who knew him just said he was an absolute genius. I believe it. I really do. I believe Tony Hancock was an absolute genius, but a tortured one as well. And I got to say one thing I noticed here that I had forgotten all about when I watched the credits was, I think this is the only show in history where the writers get a photo credit.
Yes, yeah, that is. Was odd. I remember that.
It's not odd because, well, yes, it's odd generally, but Galton and Simpson are revered as comic masters in the UK. Of course, they did Hancock, then they wrote Steptoe and Son after that, another massively popular show in the 60s and early 70s. So, they're pretty well regarded. But at that stage in the 50s, to have these young writers, this, I think this is one of their very first projects, to have their photos at the end, or their pictures along with the other cast members like Sid and Hancock, was just, I think that came as well. I believe that was Tony Hancock. He was just so in awe of Galton and Simpson. He said he wanted their pictures on the credit to show them, which is, I've never seen that before. probably never will see it again. I mean, these days, as you watch a show, the credits just like bam, 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 bam. Just
oh, yeah, they fly by. In fact, if you're watching them on TV, they shrink so they can throw some ads at you.
Yeah, oh, yeah, really, yeah, like coming yeah. soon, you know, this another crappy show. But, yeah, they'll shrink the credits, which is very disrespectful to all the people who worked on the show or the film, whatever you're watching. Mm-hmm. It's a real slap in the face to them. I think it's very disrespectful.
It's a shit industry.
Yeah, it really is. It's shit tier.
It's no way. No way. What it was. Yeah.
Because I was blown away by the credits when they showed the photos of Gotham and Simpson, because I've seen their names forever, because I used to watch Sanford and Son all the time when I was a kid, and they get credited on every episode, you know, based on characters
from Steptoe and Son.
By Gotham and Simpson. I've always known their names, and didn't see any Steptoes until they were on YouTube, when YouTube started getting big in like 2006 or whatever.
Yeah.
2005.
Yeah. John, what did you think of this?
Okay, there are these masters. I liked it. It has that type of situation that I recall from the Sanford and Sons that were adapted from Steptoe and Son scripts.
Yeah.
Because those are a bit different from when the show depended on its Hollywood writers for scripts instead of adapting the British scripts. Because the British scripts, every episode of Sanford and Son was extremely dark, and everybody seemed to be out to put one over on the other one. You know, there's a lot of that mistaken words or coincidences and everything, and so I enjoyed it. It was like the early format of that type of British sitcom writing that I enjoy.
Yeah.
And you know, my experience with this stuff is mainly what's been seen in the U.S. and Tony Hancock is not known in the U.S. at all.
No,
hadn't heard of him before.
James has a following because of Carry On.
Yeah,
and the Carry On films have a cult following over here. They were never very big over here, as far as I know, but I know they played on UHF. In the 70s and have a following from that, and I just know them from DVD, the few that I've seen, and I always thought Sid James was hysterical.
Oh, Sid James is brilliant. Him, so. Very, very, very funny man. And also his Bless His House series I think when we end up doing a Best of British Volume 2, because there will be more of these, you know, because I just think personally, you know, and I don't know how you guys feel, that these shows do need to be brought to the light for the wider audience out there. Bless His House, we definitely got to do one episode next time around.
I've been watching Bless His House on YouTube. Somebody loaded up the entire series in the movie, and I watched like the first five episodes. And so far, I really dig it.
That's what I find with these shows, and I'm not being biased, you know, being a member of the Commonwealth, but I just find British comedies a lot easier to sit through than a lot of American comedies. I'm not saying all. Like, Married with Children's, I can sit through those and they'll just fly by because they just crack me up. Because that I find to be
right.
I find to be the best American sitcom. I can't even think how many decades. It's so irreverent. It sticks its middle finger up, but it's also got a lot of British humor in there. I think the guy... Oh, I forgot the name of the guy who created it. Who passed away?
It was
away.
Levette and Loyer, I think.
Yeah,
one of them was a black dude, and one was a white dude.
It was Levitt, who was the white guy. He was He idolized British comedies, apparently. So a lot of his, a lot of what happened in Married Children, a lot of it filtered through into there, but adapted to the American climate, though.
Right, they originally worked on the Jeffersons, and so they were like frustrated Jeffersons writers with Norman Lear. And then they did It's Your Move, which was sort of a warm-up for Married with Children, and then they did Married with Children. Like, when I saw ads for it, I said, that has to be from the guys who did It's Your Move. It just looks too much like it. And, of course, when I first saw it, I was like, oh, it is the guys who did It's Your Move, so cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's definitely a bigger British influence than... most would admit. I mean, Norman Lear was adapting all these British comedies in the 70s for All in the Family and Sanford and Son. And there might have been others that he did. And Three's Company was a huge hit based on Man About the House or whatever.
Yeah, Man About the House. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, there's a lot of adaptation.
And Three's Company. Yeah, Three's Company was probably a lot. People would think, oh, smarmy sex jokes were just ugly writers. I think they were probably faithfully carried over from the British version.
Oh, they really were.
I have those on hand.
A lot of that, like the as you see, I believe this Hancock episode would have been about 1959, 1960, around there. And you can see the sort of spread of sexual, culture filtering through within 10 years by the time we got to the Love on the Buses episode, I should say. Where it became a lot more, there was none of that, humor that's in the, on the buses in the Hancock one. But the Hancocks I find be very, very cleverly written, very smartly written shows. You know, this episode is not an anomaly. They are very, very smart and very well written episodes, all those Hancocks. You know, Love Thy Neighbor's more trashier, and, you know, it doesn't take a great deal to really come up with that sort of humor, you know, in story-wise. But I think I found of all the three that we did watch, I thought this was the most, this was the smartest one of the lot, without a doubt.
Yeah, definitely the smartest.
Yeah.
I mean, it is Galton and Simpson, who are like, they are the TV comedy gods of England.
Oh, yeah. And also, it was funny as well. It wasn't like, okay, this is really smart, but I'm getting no laughs. I really laughed as well quite a bit during this one. And that obviously comes from Hancock and James as a comic pairing. It's just fantastic. You know, and what a shame people don't know about how good they are.
Do you think Hancock was burned out because Sid James became a bigger name than him probably by the 60s?
Or? From what I understand, yeah, Hancock felt threatened by Sid James' popularity.
Yeah.
Because if you go back to those early television shows, which unfortunately I think only a couple of episodes still exist, and I know the radio plays, which I've heard plenty of, he started out with himself, Sid James, Kenneth Williams from the Carry On films, playing a bunch of characters, and especially the Snide character who used to do the, and I'll try and do it, he goes, "Oh, stop missing about." That was a popular line that he had. Hancock hated that line. He goes, it doesn't sound real. It's not a natural character. So eventually Kenneth Williams got written out. Hattie Jakes from some of the Carry On films is in there as well as the female character. She got written out. And in the end, he dumped Sid James and just wanted to go alone. That's why you see some episodes as Hancock's Half Hour. They're the ones that contain Sid James and the ones that have Kenneth Williams and Hattie Jakes. And Bill Kerr as well, the Australian comedian. And also, you'll see some just titled Hancock. They're just Tony Hancock on his own. And while they're good, it's missing Sid James, if anything. It's but of course, the most popular, most famous episode of Tony Hancock's career is the Radio Ham, which is just a Hancock episode. And while I think it's quite good, it does lack that Sid James chemistry there, in my eyes.
Right, right. Well, he's enough of a contrast because Sid James always looks like he's 60 years old. Even
he's got that beaten up face, so. And you know he's like he's been put through the ringer. Yeah. And you know, but
he looks like a human walnut.
Oh, he does. But I tell you what, boy, the women like
him. And his voice is actually—he's actually a South African.
He's South African born, yeah. But British raised, so obviously.
He's got a bit of a different voice, yeah. Right? And I had noticed because I looked up some of their lives a lot. Them live short lives. Dick Emery married like 6 times.
Yeah.
And had like a heart attack when he was like 61 or something.
People always thought Dick Emery was gay. People thought Dick Emery was gay, which is not the case. It was just he played that character of Mandy, who was far from trying to be a woman. You can just tell it's Dick Emery with a blonde wig. It's just. Everyone seemed to think it's gay. And oh my God. I remember distinctly in the house we lived in. Dad watching a Dick Emery episode, because Dad being British just loved all those British comedies, watching a Dick Emery episode and just dying. Like, my dad was dying of laughter, doubled over when the character of Mandy would go up to, you know, guys would hit on the character of Mandy and go and say things, and she'd go, "Ooh, you are awful, but I like you," and then just pick him up and hurl him through a bloody a glass shop window. it was just hysterical to watch. Oh, my God, it was so funny. But people thought Emery was a homosexual, but he's not. You know, he's very, very straight man. He just did a drag character. And drag was very popular over there. Like Monty Python, my God, they made a career out of it, pretty much.
People think men dressed as women is funny, so...
Yeah.
I mean, it's always been a staple of comedy.
Like was a hit over there. It's like, the funny thing is that this came up with "Oh, You're Awful" when I suggested that was because I was over at Thanksgiving dinner with my wife's family, and they were playing a game of Balderdash. And I don't know if they had like an imported British version of it or something, but one of the answers, or, you know, I don't know how Balderdash is structured, but it's like you're supposed to guess which is the real movie. And it was "Oh, You Are Awful," and there were like these 5 different fake descriptions and 1 real one. And I heard that, went, "I've got that movie," and they all looked at me like I was crazy.
Really?
I said, "And I know what the answer is." Yeah, you know, because they have the take options. Like, it's a W.C. Fields comedy from 1932. You know, they have sort of halfway convincing descriptions for it. And I went, no, I have that movie. I have it on DVD. Except in America it was called Get Charlie Tully, so why are they calling it that in this game? And I think they all thought I was kidding. And then the next day, and I you know, nodded when they read the correct answer. So then the next day my wife put a pic of the DVD cover of my copy on Facebook, and they were all stunned. Yeah. Like, they didn't think the movie was real. And on the front of the cover is, like, Dick Emery in drag, and it says, oh, you are awful.
Yeah, that's what, the VHS tape was over here forever. It was just known as, oh, you are awful, with that picture you've got of Dick Emery. Yeah, it's Mandy, yeah.
Right, and I had, you know, and I only got the film because somebody told me, oh, that's where Aces Go Places came from, the Sam Hui Carl Macca comedy that was a huge hit.
Oh, really?
In Hong Kong in 1982. Okay. And I went, that's a remake? And then he said, yeah, it's a movie called Get Charlie Tully. Well, then I look it up on the internet. It's Oh, You Were Awful, or in England, and they had it on DVD, and so I ordered it. And, yeah, I was surprised how much Aces Go Places duplicated different scenes from it. It's not a 100% remake. There's a lot of Lupin the Third in there and other elements. But yeah, at least four or five scenes are dead-on duplicates of what's in Oh, You Were Awful. And that's when I got interested in Dick Emery and learning more about him. Here's all these British comedians exposed over here. We never heard of it. It's always Monty Python and Benny Hill.
Well, Sam Huey would obviously be well familiar with British comedians. You know, like
and Carl Macca, all those guys in Hong Kong. I mean, it was a British colony, so they probably saw all that stuff on TV in their theaters.
Well, I think I remember telling you, John, I might have even brought it up when we did the Chicken and Duck Talk episode, when I saw an interview with Michael Huey, and he was just spoken like perfect, you know, British, you know, like a British accent, English. I'm like, holy shit, okay. I figured he might have had a broken accent, obviously, being from Hong Kong, but no, he was like a really scholarly sounding guy. It's like incredible.
Yeah, they were educated in English schools.
Yeah.
All the Huey brothers went to English schools and spoke perfect English. Sam Huey sings in perfect English, and there's not much footage of him talking in English, but he can speak it fluently, I'm told.
Yeah.
So, and he raised his kids in Southern California. So he's got an American citizenship.
Yeah. We have to.
He married an American girl.
Yeah. We have to. Next episode, or one of the upcoming episodes, we've got to do The Private Eyes. And, honey, you got to see it.
Yes.
You okay. will piss yourself. It's that funny. It's a fantastic Huey Brothers movie. Okay, guys, anything else you want to expound upon with this one, with Hancock's Half Hour?
I don't really have anything to add. I mean, I enjoyed it.
Okay.
I'd watch more.
Okay, what would you get out of, let's say, out of 10, our usual rating?
Oh, gosh. As far as a, like, sitcom episode goes,
yeah,
I'd give it about a 7.
Okay. John?
I definitely want to see more of them, and I think I may have some Hancock's radio stuff on a file somewhere.
You can get them easy enough off the net. They're not that hard to find.
Right, right. Well, we bought this drive with all these old radio shows. It includes a British file.
Oh, great.
Goon shows and all that stuff.
My God, I grew up on that stuff from 18 onwards, Goon Show.
I've never heard it. I've always heard about it because Peter Sellers was something.
You'll hear things written by Spike Milligan on there, which is like, how the hell did they come up with that in 1955? It's just incredible, you know? It's just,
I bet. What I liked about this episode, the little detail, is they mentioned the original title of Agatha Christie's Ten Little Indians.
And they called it something else, though.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, I'm not going to say it for the iTunes rating, but it was known as, we know as Ten Little Indians. It was called something else at least up until 1959. So it's mentioned on the episode.
It is.
And I really liked it. I liked seeing an early performance from Sid James, probably the earliest performance I've seen, and who I'm a fan of. And I get a good set. It's a really solid historical time capsule and solid writing.
It is. All right. I'm going to give this 9 out of 10. I think it's fantastic. I absolutely love. I mean, of course, I've watched Hancock for over 20 years, so I'm more familiar with it than you guys are. And I think as you watch more episodes, if you do, I really hope you do, you'll become more and more appreciative of how good and how brilliantly written, how brilliantly acted it is. Yeah, and there's also there's other great episodes like that box set you can get from the UK, which is the one I've got. I sound like Gene Simmons saying "I" a lot. I know I'm wary of it. Don't worry, I'm horrible. But there's the box that you can get of Hancock's Half Hour, which has all surviving 37 episodes on there, spread over 8 discs, I believe it is, along with some other bonus extras. And there's an interview on there with Hancock, which is fascinating to watch. It's only, it's a solid 30-minute interview, but it's just 30 minutes of Tony Hancock being probed with questions. And you watch the guy, he's a really deep thinker. He won't just answer flippantly with something and think, oh, shit, what did he say? He sit there and think for a second and then answer. He's a very, very in-depth interview. One I recommend people watch to get an insight into the mind of Tony Hancock. Now, one other thing with I must mention about Hancock is do not watch his two films he made after the television series. The Rebel and the other one is The Punch and Judy Man. They are awful. Please don't watch them. Engage, oh, this guy's not funny at all, because they are not good. They're universally known as just horrible movies. I mean, if you really want to be a completist, I mean, I should be the same. I should be a completist and get them, because I believe they're on a double feature disc in the UK. I probably will get them just for, you know, let's say completist sake. But yeah, if that's the first thing you're going to watch, but don't, please go back and watch some Hancock's half hour and then, you know, stem into the Hancock episodes where it's just Tony Hancock, because yeah, you will be rewarded heavily.
And don't watch Hancock with Will Smith, because that's a piece of shit.
No. No. You know, when that first came out, I saw that there was a film titled Hancock. I thought, oh, it must be a biography about Tony Hancock. Because they've been saying they're going to be making one for years and years and years. You know, at least 20 years, I've heard of. 15, anyway. So I thought it might be that. I was like, Will Smith? No. Obviously, it's something else. But all right, let's move on to the next one, which is On the Buses. This one we got is season 4, I believe it is, episode something. I didn't write it down, my apologies. And the episode title is The L Bus, not the Hell Bus. That's the ones that George Soros put you on to go protest. no, the L Bus, like L as in a learner driver. And yeah, starring Reg Varney, Bob Grant, Stephen Lewis as Inspector Blakey, Doris Hare, Anna Karen, and the guy who played Arthur. I've forgotten his name. Michael Robbins, I think it is. Anyway. Mm. Okay, had you guys seen On the Buses before at all?
Nope.
Ever heard of it?
Never heard of it.
Never even heard of it. Interesting, okay.
Yeah. I found out there were three Hammer movies based on the show.
There was, yeah. I don't know if they were written after the show had finished, or they were done during the series. They had a tendency a lot over there to do films in between seasons. And what they'll do is they usually take the film. For instance, the Bless This House movie. Well, we're not talking about Bless This House this time. A lot of that... my apologies. The Love Thy Neighbor movie. A lot of that was ripped from skits from... or scenes from previous Love Thy Neighbor episodes. No, the Bless This House movie...
It's like, is that like a Now for Something Completely Different, where they just basically shot a bunch of their sketches and modified them for the...
This does run as a narrative film. There is a story running through there. It's not... Yeah, I know what you're saying. Right. That's just scenes recreated for a film's sake. No, these is actually a movie, but they do pinch a lot of scenes and just sort of thread them together, you know. But so, never heard of On the Bus. Okay, this is the one that's probably the earliest for me, is this show. And like I said, it was on television all the time over here. So, yeah. You know, yeah, Australian TV was fantastic, mate, back in my day as a kid. It was the best. And we had, you know, Monkey as well from Japan. And
Yeah
we just had all sorts of stuff to watch. All the cool shit.
I noticed I got a box set of that in England available.
Oh, of On the Buses?
No, Monkey.
Oh, it's over here as well. Yeah, it's all episodes over here.
Oh, really? Yeah. I have to save up for that to get it. I think they got the water margin, too.
So. I've seen it down to about... $50, I think, for the whole season with a whole series with 52 episodes on there. Because there was
that's
one.
That's what it goes for, I think, on Amazon. Yeah. So I think with the Trump dollar, I might even get it cheaper in a month or so.
That's what I need to look real quick. That's what I need to put on the American currency in God We Trump. Anyway. All right. So, yeah. Okay. This episode. Starts off in the bus depot with Reg Varney's character of Stan Butler and Bob Grant's character of Jack Harper. Stan's the driver and Jack is his conductor. In the depot with a couple of trainee drivers and a couple of trainee clippies. Clippies are the women who give out the tickets. And you know, clip the ticket and that's your admission pass on the bus. That's what the term clippies is. And they have to take them out for a lesson, and not a great deal happens. The story also features the story of his sister, Olive, and her husband, Arthur, and their squeaking bed. It's yeah.
Oh, are they? No.
But this is what I'm getting at, where it gets more raunchier in, say, the 10-12 years time gap from Hancock to On the Buses episode.
Like, yeah, there's a lot more sex jokes.
Exactly. Yeah.
A lot more sexist jokes too.
Oh, absolutely. And it doesn't get any better with Love Thy Neighbor a bit later on. So it also involves the bed in not the best shape of Olive and Arthur's, and Jack offering to sell them another bed for 15 quid, which back then would have been a fair chunk of change, but, you know, they needed the bed. And them trying to get the trainees to get the bed from the place of Jack's aunt over to the house.
And it's cheap because his uncle died in
his
it.
His uncle died in it, yeah, as well. But I'll give you a fun fact which you guys probably won't know, since you're not familiar with On the Buses. The character of Olive, played by Anna Karen, she was an ex-model.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Hmm. I would never have guessed. I would have thought she was a character actor.
No. She was actually all just dressed down for the TV show, you know, the big sort of, you know, National Health glasses, the big Coke bottles, and the
right,
and the hair all, you know, unkempt. And yeah, but no, she was actually an ex-model if you look it up in her year before On the Buses. You wouldn't believe it, but yeah, glamour model was what she was. Yeah.
Hmm.
Another person who's South African born as well.
Huh.
Yeah. You wouldn't know a lot of South Africans in the entertainment field in the UK back then. But what do you guys think of this one? Because, like I said, this is markedly different in terms of writing and all sorts from Hancock. John?
I was amused by it. It seemed to be they started off writing a different script and then decided, no, wait, we're going to do this couch.
Yeah.
You know, or the squeaky bed and all that. And I noticed it was a very slice of life, a slice of working class life, which you do not see in American sitcom at all.
Everybody's mysteriously wealthy in American sitcoms.
Yeah.
And if they're like waiters, they're like super wealthy and have nice apartments and stuff.
Yeah, like Friends, it's like...
Yeah, Friends, exactly. Yeah. Good point, Hunter. Yeah.
Everybody lives in a dirty flat or whatever. You know, they don't... they look like National Health Dentistry, you know, the male characters and everything.
Yeah, it really is, yeah.
And it's just like, nobody looks healthy. And I think... I found out they had one of these guys who's like 54 years old and he's playing like a 30-year-old character.
Yeah,
the really extremely like sexist stuff with women is probably what also kept it off the air in America, you know, around that time. I don't think they would have allowed even something that leering, but you know, we see that as just cheeky humor.
I'll tell you one thing you guys obviously noticed, and one thing you would never have had on American television, you would never have had a guy, an authoritative figure, looking exactly like Hitler. Like
Blake, exactly. Not at all. I was a little surprised by that.
It's not telegraphed or like this guy might look like Hitler. No, they call him Hitler in the episodes quite a few times in other episodes. Like, oh, here
he
comes.
Not even German.
He's not. No, he's a gay British actor. That's what he is. No, he really was a gay British actor, Stephen Lewis. He just died, I think, last year or this year.
Really?
Yeah, he was in his 90s when he passed away.
I was going to say, because he looks old in this show.
Yeah, he does. I think he was younger than Reg Varney, I believe, who played the lead of Stan Butler.
Jeez. Yeah. I looked it up, and apparently critics like hated that show. Audiences loved it, and critics despised it.
Oh, yeah, because it wouldn't have painted a very good portrayal of Britain at the time. You know, it's the, like you said, right, it's very working class, crammed in this small tenement house in London. And
pretty much everybody's like, it's... Everybody acts like, you know, everybody's kind of a pig in it, but in a funny, endearing way.
Look at the, to translate this episode today and show social justice warriors, and they've got this guy who's married to this woman, and, you know, the bed's just been redone by Stan after he's tightened the bolts up on it. And, you know, he says, get in the bed, because he wants to see if it takes 5-ton weight. He goes, right, Olive, get in.
Yeah.
No way would that pass these days.
And also, just half the jokes are about him not wanting to sleep with his wife.
Oh yeah, that's a running theme throughout.
The whole series. Sleeps alone downstairs. Best sleep of my life.
Yeah.
And he's like, I've made a decision.
British comedy too.
I've made a decision. We're going to get twin beds,
single beds,
single beds. Yes.
Yeah, and also, like, one thing you notice as well in a lot of American shows that they don't eat crap. They eat like, you know, they'll eat sushi. They'll eat, you know, healthy. Oh, here they're eating egg and chips and baked beans and
they eat eggs and bacon and like. Was it like, yeah, in American shows, they eat what Swipples in L.A. eat, you know?
Exactly, right? Yeah.
Right. Santa Monica writers, you know, writers living in nice lofts in Santa Monica had a sushi bar, a Starbucks, and they're just... I remember the young ones actually taught me what lentils were, because I'd never heard of them.
You never heard of lentils? Yeah, it's an Indian.
I never heard of them. It's not a common, even for poor people in America, it's not even a common food.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, in the U.S. as well, you probably don't have that big an Indian contingent like you do, especially in the UK and over here. We have a lot of Indians over here. No, that's it. You don't have that sort of influence over there. So, you know, lentils over here, you can buy them anywhere, basically.
All they've got are a lot of white movie fans pretending Bollywood films are great.
Yeah.
Bollywood films about 2.5 hours, a lot of singing, not a lot of story. A
lot of head shaking.
A lot of head shaking. A lot of one thing a guy mentioned to me who's Indian said was, "What's the one thing you don't see in Indian films? No violence, no death ever. It's not allowed. Nobody gets killed in an Indian movie."
Even like the horror ones are surprisingly death free.
Yeah,
you know, and even if somebody dies, they come back as like a ghost or something. I don't know, like or no, they go as a fly or something. I don't know. It's always something weird and mystical to where there's no finality to it.
Garrow's the expert because, you know, he can spit venom.
Absolutely, yeah.
And, but, like, when you look at, like, Indian movies loved by Western critics, it's always like Satyajit Ray or something.
Yeah.
Right.
And some of the women in those Bollywood films, oh, God. Yeah, just stunning. They are gorgeous. Just stunning. Yeah.
Yeah, they get the best of the Brahmins in there.
Are you dog whistling something? I don't know. That's exciting. I don't want to know.
Not intentionally.
No, right. But okay. So you guys, what were your initial thoughts? Like I said, I asked you if you'd ever heard of it. And you said no, but what did you think of it?
I thought it was pretty funny.
You like this one? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I like the last one too.
I was actually curious as I was watching these three. I was really thinking, I wonder what these two guys think of it. I was really wanted to know because, like I said, I grew up on it, but I was pretty sure you had at least not seen one of them, if not two of them. But yeah, I was just curious. So you really enjoyed this one, huh? That's okay. That's interesting.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, okay. I had a pretty good time with it. I mean, it kind of took me aback because, you know, you don't see this kind of humor on TV here anymore.
No.
You know,
like, no.
At all. You know, yeah. you're not allowed.
If you ever really did, tell the truth.
Would this sort of stuff play just strictly on, say, UHF channels if it did play in the US?
If it did, it would have to be on PBS. This one is so rough but I don't think PBS would show it because it's too working class. They didn't do a favor though. Like PBS over here, for our international listeners, public broadcasting service, they would show Monty Python. They wouldn't show Benny Hill. Benny Hill played on, believe it or not, a local NBC affiliate.
Oh, because Benny Hill was massive. He was massive. That's why I think they couldn't sort of ignore it. They had to put it out there because there would have been still some people saying, "Where's this Benny Hill we keep hearing about?" Even without the internet, you know.
Well, HBO really pushed Benny Hill with specials that were like best of specials they'd run every year, and then NBC affiliates ran Benny Hill in Mississippi, which they always act like is so oppressive. They were running Benny Hill after Johnny Carson.
I'll tell you what,
it had the nudity and everything. They didn't cut him. I was stunned when I was a kid watching them.
Because I'll tell you why Benny Hill translated better than a lot of these other British shows, less talking. Okay?
Yes.
And that's not a slight on the British people at all, obviously. But I'm saying is, his was strictly visual. He tapped in this knowing, okay, if I'm going to go worldwide and there's going to be other countries who don't speak English, I've got to make mine a lot more visual and a lot less dialogue. That's why it was a lot more farce and mirth to it. And Mm-hmm. And that's why he's well known, because my grandfather, for instance, Greek man, obviously, old Greek man, I would sit there as a kid, and he would be, my mother was sitting there as well, my mum was saying in Greek, you know, Dad, calm down. He'd be laughing that hard, his chest would start beating that hard, because he could, because he had limited English, he could mm-hmm. you know, the eyes don't lie, you see what you see. It's funny regardless of whatever language it's coming from, if it's a visual joke or a visual gag. And that's why I've always said Benny Hill translated better than all the others, because a lot of these all dialogue heavy. Hancock, Love Thy Neighbor was strictly relied on dialogue, you know, primarily. Same with Love Thy Neighbor.
Yeah, a lot of them sound like it's like reading Andy Capp out loud.
Yeah,
some of the stuff. So
yeah.
Like, it's very northern accents or whatever, and it's kind of incomprehensible to the average American viewer. I mean, also Benny Hill. I mean, it was huge with like redneck types. I remember that being big with everybody. Like, everybody knew who Benny Hill was. And I started laughing if you brought it up. So, it's like, he was watched by everybody. Monty Python was more of an acquired taste, but super popular.
Yeah, because there was more like an intellectual sort of humor. That's why, you know.
Yeah. The funny thing is, I really can't get into Monty Python now.
Like, really?
I'm bored by it.
Okay. I don't know what it is.
And maybe I got to go back and watch The Flying Circus again. I'm probably just tired of the movies. And, you know, there's just something about it. I was overexposed to it as a kid. So it's kind of like, okay, it's not making me laugh like it used to because I'm not a kid anymore.
See, I'd be more...
Fawlty Towers.
Yeah, Fawlty Towers. No, Fawlty Towers would still translate well. It's you know, it still has a universal appeal and a very big market out there. Because John Cleese, you know.
Exactly. Although I always thought Prunella Scales was actually the funniest actor on it.
Oh, she was fantastic, yeah.
The Are You Being Served was really huge. Like, they were running it.
See, that I never
night.
Got. I just never got in that show. I watched it, I go, I just, it's not tickling my funny bone. It's, I'm not getting it.
Yeah, I didn't get it either. And one of our listeners, Anthony Nesbitt, had said that he somehow knew that, like, I guess gays in America really got into it, and that's why it was.
Oh, they would have loved John Inman, but that's why.
Right, and I believe it was remade, one of those shows was remade as a comedy called Check It Out, which was a Canadian sitcom starring Don Adams. And
oh,
he was
boy.
In charge of a grocery store. They take it to a grocery store. It's pretty bad from what I remember, but I think it was based on Are You Being Served. And but yeah, there was never – oh, I did find out. I did a little research. There was an American attempt at On the Buses with Dom DeLuise.
Oh, boy. Well, there's an American Fawlty Towers as well with Ben Arthur. Which I
saw that. Amanda by the Sea.
That was it. Yeah, and they said it was just abysmal. Yeah, it just.
Oh, I remember it. I watched it, and it was just a god awful show.
I know with Fawlty Towers, John Cleese did get offered just millions and millions and millions of dollars to do another 51 episodes in the US. And Fawlty Towers, he goes no. He goes, I've done it. It's run its course. There's nothing more to do. But, so that's why he was smart. What I'm saying is he was smart enough to say, look, this is a property of mine that I'm very fond of. It's very dear to me. I don't want his name tarnished by doing another 51 episodes. And no. And because that's the thing. A lot of you guys may or may not know, when an American television show is in production for a series, if it's a half-hour comedy show, what's it usually, 22 episodes a season?
At one point in the 70s, it was like 32, and then it became 26.
Okay. In the UK, it's six.
Yeah.
It's six episodes to a season. Sometimes it did run to 13. I know some On the Buses seasons did run to 13. Usually, the first couple of seasons will run only six episodes. That's why if you watch the young ones, first season in 1982, six episodes. Second season in 1985, 3 years later, mind you, six episodes. That's all it was.
Yeah. And so. MTV ran them over and over and over again.
Oh, yeah.
MTV ran the young ones for like 3 or 4 years straight on Sunday nights. That's where we saw
it. It was completely it was off the wall. I'd never seen nothing like it at its time. It's just like...
Yeah, it was very surreal. I'd never seen surrealism in a sitcom. So,
well, I was unfamiliar with the comic strip that a lot of these guys came from. Which I do have that box set as well. The comic strip presents the entire box. It does not have Eat the Rich near the film, though, unfortunately, which I do need to get. And you can see that sort of anarchic humor. Yes, it's very leftist humor, but I still find it funny. You know, like Alexei Sale in there and Rick Mayall, obviously my favorite comedian of all time, or one of them. But it's very, very cutting sort of humor. And that translated straight through to the young ones as well. But
yeah, and I could give you the whole history of the British sitcom being brought over here, but it's like absolutely fabulous. It's like a massive, probably the biggest runaway hit I've seen.
And I don't get it. I mean, okay, it's obviously.
And I don't get it. I've tried watching it. And I don't get it. And I had people tell me it's hilarious.
I mean, yeah,
I'm watching. I'm like, I don't understand it.
It's geared more towards women, which is fine. You know, they're not going to. Yeah. I can't see many women sitting down watching on the buses and going, "Yeah, that was a riot. Yeah, that was hysterical." I don't believe that would be the case, but.
No. No, they won't find it funny at all.
Oh, no, same with Benny Hill. A lot of women just think Benny Hill's a chauvinist pig, where guys will sit down and just literally wet their pants laughing because it is that funny. So,
right.
But, yeah, anyway, John, what did you think of this one?
I liked On the Buses, and like I said, it's like a working-class sitcom you don't see anymore. And, of course, I'm always interested in something I have not gotten into yet, or a new discovery of something that old that I find pretty amusing. And probably influenced a lot of stuff that wouldn't admit to it.
Oh, for
sure. I know, like, Ben Elton of the comic strip was always, like, putting down people at Benny Hill and probably put down shows like this.
Ben Elton's a pretty friggin' diehard socialist, and he's made no bones about that.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah,
but, yeah, I mean, he badmouthed Benny Hill, like, in the 80s, and I think I read Benny Hill died alone in his apartment.
He did, yeah. I watched an interview with Benny Hill. And people just thought, he was just a misogynistic man who treated women like shit. No, they reckon women who worked on the show go that he was absolutely the nicest gentleman, wouldn't go and fondle him. And he said he was wickedly smart. He spoke like three languages. The interview I saw with him, he was speaking fluent French without stumbling his words. And now, this interview was from French television. And he was speaking fluent French. Like, he wasn't sitting there going, how do you say it in French? No, he was fluent.
Like me and Hunter would be doing if we were trying to speak it.
The only other person who I've seen, and you probably won't believe this, the only other person I've seen do an interview in another language besides English, and it was in French also, was Iggy Pop. I watched a DVD of Iggy Pop. Wow. And he was just sitting there, just rattling on in French. Again, no stumbling, no fumbling for words or trying to find the right terminology. No, it was pure fluent French. I was like, wow.
Yeah, I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And from Iggy Pop, like I've heard about other people say, you know, you see the character of Iggy Pop on stage, but when you see, what's his name, John Osterberg, is it? On off stage?
Yeah, James Osterberg.
James, sorry. They go, he doesn't like to be called Iggy off stage, just his usual name. And they reckon he likes his drink and his drugs. But they said he's really, really smart guy. And I've heard that, or read that, numerous times. So
his father's an English professor, or was an English professor.
Okay.
Like at the Michigan State or whatever college he grew up near in Detroit. So it's like, yeah, he was very lettered. Apparently he would get into arguments about Raymond Chandler novels with David Bowie and Lou Reed. So, you know, like he knew the books better than they did.
Yeah.
And of course they was talking about, so it's just strange things like that, but he was very well, very, very intelligent man. And with On the Buses, I was like, okay, you know, I need to see more of these, and I want to see these Hammer movies that I've because over in America, the Hammer comedies never made it over here. There was no market for them.
Yeah,
it's like Hammer produced a lot of things. All these moons who think it's all horror films with Peter Cushing.
No, no, not at all.
Well, yeah, it's like the Shaw Brothers. You know, they had movies other than kung fu films. You know, but
musicals, dramas, comedies, all sorts of stuff, yeah. And everybody thinks all the
cop movies. You know,
we have what was that kind of American myopia we have?
What was that Shaw Brothers one that I liked a lot? Anna?
The Boxer's Omen.
Oh, God. It's a horrible movie. Actually, one of the worst piles of crap. Like Boxer's Omen. It's terrible. Oh, my goodness, God.
It's a masterpiece.
Oh, be quiet.
Well, that was a very late period shot. When they was just,
It wasn't even shot in widescreen. It was like...
No, they were shooting in Chosco.
The one I want to see of the Shaw Brothers, because I was going through my collection of films, and one I saw was like... Oh, I want to see this again. The Magic Blade. I want to see that again.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, Devil Grandma.
Devil Grandma, yeah. Oh, my God.
that's a good one.
Yeah, I do want to see The Magic Blade again, for sure. But all right, let's move on. What would you guys give this rating of On the Buses? I'm going to say I personally liked it a lot. There are better ones, but I picked this one because I know it keeps in tone with the actual show. It's got the farce, and it's got the humor in there. And features, you know, a very sort of even amount of time for everybody, like Blakey and Arthur and Olive, besides the main characters. So, yeah, there are some other ones in there where you'll get a few minutes of Blakey and a few minutes of Olive and Arthur, and I wanted to get one that had equal time for everybody, so you got to know them a bit throughout the course of the 25 minutes. So that's why I picked this one. But, yeah, what would you guys give this out of 10? Hunter?
I give it about an 8. I laughed a lot.
Okay, good.
It got a lot of belly laughs from me.
Okay, next question would be to you. Would you be inclined to pick up the box set, say if it was about 20 or 30 bucks for the whole series?
Yeah, sure, sure.
Okay, good, good. All right, John?
Give it a 7. I would definitely, like I said, I'm seeing more of the show and seeing those Hammer films, which I guess are a little raunchier than the TV show. But yeah, I found it amusing. Like nothing you've seen on American TV in a long time.
And I will say, you can get the box set of the Hancock, like we said, and I'll put the links up to them in the show notes for this. You can buy the box set of On the Buses. It's like 20 quid, I think. And you can buy the three movies as well in a three-pack for about, I think, 10 quid maybe. So all up, you're looking, if you're in the US, probably looking about 50 bucks for everything of On the Buses, including the movies in there. So you are... it'd be well worth doing it. And I'm going to give this episode a 7.5. I enjoyed it. I think of the three I watched, I think it's the lesser, but that's by no means saying it's bad. Let me just say that.
Right.
But
all right. It's a sampler. You know, these aren't meant to be judged really on one episode.
No.
A good season or two to really judge a show.
But what I can do with On the Buses is I can actually sit there and just watch one and then another one and another one very easily. Very, very easily. It's not like something where I watch a couple of episodes and like, okay, I'm full. You know, you eat a lot and you go, okay, that's it. I can't take any more. It's with these, I can do a lazy Sunday afternoon easily on these things and just rip through half a dozen episodes without a problem at all.
It's interesting because chatting with you on Facebook on everything about these, and we were planning this show, I was thinking, you know, I've probably collected every action film I'll ever need. Until there's some great archive Blu-ray release of something.
Oh, yeah.
I've got most of the Hong Kong movies I need until older titles come out of the vaults somewhere. This is kind of like British comedy. It's kind of like the final frontier of collecting.
And right now, and the thing available. Is, as well, you won't be shortchanged with 20 quid for this show. You're going to get hour upon hour upon hour upon hour of entertainment. So it's not like you're shelling out for a 90-minute movie. Not at all. And yeah, the Amazon UK is the gold mine of British comedy shows. It's got basically everything, and they box set them all. So you basically can't lose. So that's that. Now let's move on to Love Thy Neighbor, season 2, episode 2. I know that for a fact. I did the research on that episode titled Voodoo. This is one of my favorite ones of this show. There's many of them, believe me. But this is one of my favorites. And it stars Jack Smethurst as Eddie Booth, Rudolph Walker as Bill Reynolds, and Kate Williams as Joan Booth, and Nita Baden-Semper as Barbie Reynolds, the wife of Bill Reynolds. The Reynolds are the black couple who live next door to the what would be deemed as a racist, bigot, everything that you call it these days, Eddie Booth, who are... surprisingly, in this show, Eddie Booth's character is a socialist. And oh boy, hasn't that turned around these days?
Right.
Show me a socialist these days who would talk like Eddie Booth. Probably wouldn't find any. let's see the college professors play this one in your colleges and show it well.
They might just to show you how terrible. You know, people were back then.
Yeah. What an awful time the 70s was. And yet after that, they all go to a 70s disco on a Friday night and relive this horrible 70s music. Give me a break.
Or talk about how everything Al Pacino made was the greatest cinema of all time.
The
70s cinema worship I get a little tired of.
Oh, and before we forget, can we all get a rousing yay for the death of Fidel Castro?
Oh, yeah.
Hoorah!
Good riddance, you piece of shit.
Fuck off and die, and he did it.
Amen.
F-O-A-D.
Amen. Amen.
The CIA's die of natural causes technique finally worked.
Yeah. What was funny was somebody put out, I think it was that God Emperor Trump page, goes, 11 presidents couldn't kill him. Trump's in 3 weeks and he dies. we can't stop winning.
have you seen the conspiracy theories that Justin Trudeau is the son of Fidel Castro?
Oh my God, have you seen that parallel face they did?
Awesome.
They look exactly alike. And Trudeau's mother did hang out with Fidel.
You gotta wonder, right? Honestly,
and you know, like Trudeau is like the cuckiest of the cuck world leaders. You know,
I think on behalf of the MMC, Justin Trudeau, FOAD. Now, please. All right, let's get back to Love My Neighbor.
The funniest thing is, although by next spring, I think Rob will be kneeling before Zod. If you know what I mean.
Hell yes, he will. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Hopefully Zod's got a machete ready as well. Anyway, all right.
Love Thy Neighbor.
Yeah, Love Thy Neighbor. Okay, had you guys heard of this show before?
No, never heard of it.
Never heard of it. Hannah?
Yeah. A quick Google said racist show returns to air.
Now, wasn't there an Andrew Dice Clay show called Love Thy Neighbor? Or am I mistaken?
It was called Bless His House.
Bless His House. Oh, okay.
but no relation to this. What's this fucking house?
What's this fucking house? Hey, fucking microwave home working. Hey,
go to this house.
Fucking house takes a potpourri. What is this shit?
What is
keep this house off the baloney pump.
All right, so
with this guy, you two together.
Yeah. All right, so you never heard of Love Thy Neighbor? Wow, this is blowing my mind.
Nope.
Not surprised, but it is still blowing my mind regardless. Okay, I got to ask you this one of all of them. Hannah, what did you think?
I thought it was pretty funny, I will say.
Did you sit there and think, how the fuck did they get away with this back then?
I kind of did, but then I kind of, I don't know. There was some humor like this on TV with All in the Family, and
to this extent, because I've really seen a great deal of All in the Family.
I don't know. I don't know if it. I don't think All in the Family was as relentless as this was in certain scenes.
But it wasn't. I've seen a lot of All in the Family. It was never this in your face and relentless.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
the
Archie
first
Bunker
five would... minutes. Yeah, just the first 5 minutes was more upfront than in All in the Family.
I know, like, you just have the occasional remark from Archie, like, England is a fag country, you know, or something.
Or, no, he called Black Spearhunters. They had these kind of weird, like, soft slangs in All in the Family.
Whereas this was, like, straight out, like, full on.
Blacks are underdeveloped. It's like, holy shit.
I mean, I was completely astonished. And
I don't want to stick in your big black nose.
But what was refreshing, it was just so in your face that it made it hilarious, and it was braver. Like, it wasn't promoting racism or anything. And,
No.
I read an interview with the guy who played Bill Reynolds, and he said, you know, that it was a more well-rounded role than anything he was offered afterwards.
Yeah.
He says that was the way to laugh at racism. It was to laugh at how stupid it was, because, you know, the white guy is the stupidest guy on the show.
Oh, yeah.
And even the black, you know, the black husband is stubborn, but he's incredibly educated and a lot smarter than the white guy. So it's kind of it's a pretty good contrast. But he's stubborn. That's his big flaw. He's
very, very British.
But the thing is, the racist, well, if you call that, I won't call that, but for generalization, the racist humor in this is not one directional. It's not the white towards the black.
No,
it goes
no.
both ways. Like, you know, pinky, ponky, me, white, honky. I mean, Jesus Christ.
Me white, honky. Me, white, honky.
And even you got, like, when, I mean, you show me a television show today, it would have a white guy sticking a pin to a black voodoo doll. It's like, wouldn't happen. And he's sticking a doll on the front door, basically like akin to, say, the Klan putting a fucking cross in your front yard on fire. But and you also, like, for instance, you'd even have the wife of Bill Reynolds, Barbie Reynolds, insulting Eddie, you know, going, "Hello, big fat Eddie." It wouldn't happen these days. You wouldn't get away with that sort of stuff. No. So, no. I just like I said, I'd seen this many times, this episode, and all the other episodes, I got to say, are pretty much as relentless as this. It doesn't let up at all.
I was just stunned. I was really stunned. I hadn't seen anything this honest in a long time.
Yeah.
In America, we're kind of conditioned to think Norman Lear's sitcoms were like the height of, you know, politically incorrect comedy of the 70s. That's just
why. But the thing about Norman Lear was that that was not the intention.
No.
Right. It backfired. I think All of the Family backfired. I think Archie Bunker was worshipped, and he was supposed to be discrediting that type of working class guy. And,
they were like, one of us.
Like, it was so. But those were. It was. I mean, he. This comedy made the Norman Lear stuff look like the Mickey Mouse Club. It was just so in your face. I mean, just right out the bat, first 45 seconds. I mean, I could see people turning it off, too sensitive to this type of stuff.
Oh yeah. I mean, okay. So the story quickly on this is that Eddie Booth is a worker in a factory. We don't see in this episode, but it is the case. He's a worker in a factory. Along with his mates Arthur and Jacko and Bill Reynolds, who was the black male character in this. And Eddie and Bill are neighbours, warring neighbours, mind you. And Eddie comes home only to find that the television, after trying to get a ticket, was all sold out. He complained about black people being everywhere. Everywhere you turn, there's an eggnog, there's a Sambo, whatever. Finds out his television's on the blink, not working. And sits there and complains about it. Television repairman turns up and, come on, mate. Glad to see you. And he's a black guy, so it's like more black guys there, but at least he's there for a good cause. Anyway, Eddie places a supposed voodoo curse on his neighbor Bill. And Bill pretends to be struck down with his voodoo curse and is apparently, in Eddie's mind, dying of it. So to reverse the curse, Eddie has to go out and do what Bill beckons him, which is dance around a tree naked at midnight, saying "me pinky bonky, me white honky, oodoo loodoo, break this voodoo." Yeah, basically not much of a story to it, but I still thought it was very funny. John, did you think it was funny at all?
No, I was laughing my ass off at it.
Yeah, I don't think it was sort of hysterical. I don't think it's hysterical over and over, but it is. I think what would be classed today as taboo comedy as well gives it that sort of heightened sense of comedy to it. Because you would never, as we said, you'll never see this again on TV.
No, it has a certain amount of shock humor for me.
You grew up on it. Yeah, but the thing is, you grew up on it. You're 100% shocked to the dickens by it. To me, the only thing comparable, like in the U.S., is there are some of the rarely screened episodes of Sanford and Son where he's, you know, Red Fox is dropping bombs left and right. And he's, you know, people forget on that show he was an openly prejudiced black guy.
Yeah.
Which you just wouldn't, you certainly wouldn't see on TV since. And that's actually what carried that show, I think, beyond Steptoe and Son. It became something totally different.
Oh, again, I think
watching this.
Yeah. I was just going to say, I think what they did with Sanford and Son was they took the premise of Steptoe and Son, but took the racial humor of Love Thy Neighbor and fused them together.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, although I don't think they were influenced by Love Thy Neighbor. I think they were letting Red Fox. Supposedly, he was rewriting the scripts all the time.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me.
No, that's not funny. You know, and he would rewrite it, you know, and make it funny. That's what LaWanda Page claimed.
Wasn't Paul Mooney behind Sanford and Son? Was he one of the writers?
Paul Mooney wrote the infamous Lamont Gibbons. No, it was Fred Sanford, Legal Eagle. And that was episode, and that was the infamous. Fred used an N-bomb that is often censored on reruns on cable. And it's the funniest, probably all-time funniest joke of the series.
Yeah.
You ask any black guy about Sanford and Son, and they will immediately recall that episode and that line, because it's the funniest damn thing ever said on that show. And I found out there were other ones that were rarely seen in reruns when I got them on DVD, because Fred was, you know, was dropping N-bombs and calling, you know, other blacks slurs and stuff. It's like, whoa. And they didn't rerun those as much. I think they were scared to.
I don't know.
Some were remakes of Galton Simpson scripts, but they did have that racial element.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because the Galton Simpson stuff. They did have small traces of it in Steptoe and Son, like, you know, that one where Albert and Harold go to the Chinese restaurant and he goes, Chinaman, I don't trust Chinaman. They're always sneaking up on you. But there's small trace of it in there, but not as blatantly obvious as what Sanford and Son had, or Love Thy Neighbor, obviously.
Right.
But
yeah, Love Thy Neighbor, it was very in your face. I was like, I just hadn't seen that in a while or in another show.
I don't think there's any N-bombs in it. From memory, like I said, I haven't seen them all. I've seen them all, but I've not seen them for a number of years. Some I tend to watch more than others. But yeah, Nignog, Sambo. I mean, there's even episodes of Eddie walking around in blackface. I mean, it'd never happen again now. That would never happen.
Not at all.
No. But, yeah, and also reference, like I said, to Sambo running around the tree being chased, you know. And which is a book I read as a kid, you know, in school. That was taught in school. Was Little Black Sambo.
Sure. I read it too.
We were taught it in school, in primary school. So, yeah, it would never happen now, but...
Well, I did find out, Stu, that there's an American there was an American version, and there's very little info on it. It ran so briefly on network television in 1973, and it was gone like a few weeks.
But they should have known. It's not going to translate to American audiences. It's not going to.
No.
It's a different environment, different everything, different sense of humor. I mean, they did Love Thy Neighbor in Australia over here after the series had finished. They did it around. I've got the 6-episode small run series. And it doesn't work. You know, it's not funny. It's okay. The jokes are towards Australians. I don't care. That doesn't get me offended at all. But they're just not funny. That's the whole problem. If they were funny, I'd be pissing myself laughing. But it doesn't work. But as a Love Thy Neighbor fan, I had to have it.
Right. The American version, supposedly Eddie was a redneck, which is what Norman Lear originally wanted to do with Archie Bunker. He wanted to make him a Southerner. Living in New York, and Carol O'Connor said, no, he's going to be one of these working class New Yorker guys that I know.
Yeah.
Like these, you know, these Joe Sixpack types who talk like this, because I know plenty of New Yorkers who talk like this. So, you know, so basically they went with that concept of Love Thy Neighbor in America, but it didn't work because the show just didn't last and nobody remembers it.
Like, nah.
You know, there's no YouTube clips or anything.
Nah. But there is, in the UK, a complete collection of Love Thy Neighbor. Now, be careful. There's two. There was one that was released, and it was purported that it had an episode missing that was deemed way too offensive. I forgot the name of the episode. Apparently, it's missing out of that box. There was a repackaged one, which I will put the link up to in the show notes for all these ones that you can buy. Some guy, thankfully, in the UK... He was pretty much a big Love Thy Neighbor fan, went through episode by episode by episode of the, I think even of the BBC sheets, of the actual production sheets of the show. The set that has been repackaged is not incomplete. It is a complete set. So it has every episode. Okay. And that I've got to get. It's about £28 at the moment, but I don't care. I got to have it. I want it. Because I only have the first two seasons on... DVD that were released here, and the rest are all on old videotapes, and I just want to completely remove the lot and put that one nice big box set on my shelf. But let's get some ratings on this. John, what would you give this out of a 10?
I give it an 8. I was laughing. I got some big laughs out of this.
Okay, this would encourage you to see more episodes of this show, would it?
Certainly. There's obviously going to be more there if this is second season. So,
yeah.
You need to see more.
There's plenty more. And I think they get a bit more raunchier as they get along. As the laws become a bit more relaxed, the jokes become a bit more saucier as well. So, Yeah. Same with on the buses, especially with the females. And I got to say, some of the women on the buses episodes are, oh, my God. Just, women who look like women, thank God.
Nothing quite like the British women of the early 70s TV and movies.
Oh, my goodness, yeah. And, and the Confessions ones. I tell you what, we've got to do one of those one day. Confessions of a Pop Performer. I would love to do that. Anyway, Hannah, what would you give this out of 10?
I give it an 8 as well.
Nice.
And I would watch more.
Okay.
For sure.
This one, I'm going to give an 8.5. I thoroughly enjoyed it. And, yeah, I think it's great. And would this encourage you to watch more of them again, Hannah?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Sure. Okay, no worries. All right, well, we hope you enjoyed our sort of primer for British comedy shows that you would be unfamiliar with for the most part. Very glad that you two enjoy them. I was very, very curious how you were going to sort of react to these. I wasn't sure, especially with sort of Hancock being as old as it is. I was a bit... I wonder how it's going to go down. But, yeah, very happy that it did. We say
I grew up on Nick at Night, so, you know.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, there's not a great deal.
I watch old Peter Sellers movies.
Not a lot of difference between, you know, sort of the humor of Hancock and Keenan and Kel, so.
Yeah, of course.
Very similar.
Well, but Nick at Night was like the old stuff. You know, that's when they would show like Get Smart.
It used to be old
stuff. Yes, yes. I'm getting mixed up with Nickelodeon. My apologies.
Yeah, and wait, it was on Nickelodeon, but that's when they switched to the. That's it. At night they would play old sitcoms.
Oh, I see. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but still, Sons and Donna Reed.
Yeah. And the masterful Gilligan's Island.
Yeah, they would show Gilligan's Island.
They wouldn't play that. What was cool about Nick at Night was they were showing things that had not been seen on television in years, like the black and white My Three Sons. And they showed Route 66, which we had not seen.
Oh, boy.
I seem to remember there was one point where they were playing Gilligan's Island at some point.
Oh, shit. That's terrible. I'm pretty sure I remember.
They were playing Nick at Night Gilligan on that here. So I don't know about over there, but they were here for sure.
I remember it was a little later. It wasn't early on when it was really good. It was a little later. They were playing.
Nick at Night when it started was fantastic.
Yeah, they were playing like Laverne and Shirley, and they were playing some.
Oh, so they became the TBS of 1980s.
They played WKRP as well on Nick at Night over here.
That show's so fucking overrated. Can I just say that?
you know, it has its moments, but it's
extraordinarily overrated. I mean, really.
I mean, I like Howard Hessman.
Thanksgiving always reminds. Yeah, he's all right.
Yeah.
It's not that the cast is bad. Tim Reed is good. Like, everybody's actually good in the show. But the script writing is actually more heavy-handed than people remember. Yeah. And it's more pretentious. And there's all these attacks on what's obviously it slams at Reagan and slams at the religious right. And they're committed to control everything. It's just like, it's so silly. There's a lot of dumb shit in there.
Yeah. Yeah, there is. But
it hasn't aged well.
No, some of those haven't aged at all. Like, I was watching Mork and Mindy.
I never got into that show.
Yeah. I mean, as a kid,
I remember Mork debuted on Happy Days. I actually remember the night.
Yeah, I remember that too, yeah. Yeah.
They called it Fonzie's Star Wars. And of course, when you're a kid in 77 or 78, like, anything Star Wars is mentioned on TV.
It was guaranteed ratings, buddy. Boom, yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
Unless it was a Star Wars holiday special in there. That killed that off real quick.
And I watched that on broadcast when it happened and was baffled.
Oh, boy, that would have been a long 2 hours. That is hideous, that thing.
That's awful.
Why people would even want that? When the Star Wars box sets come out and people go, oh, man, this Star Wars box set sucks, hasn't got the holiday special. How many times are you really going to watch it? I mean, really? I mean, you can throw everything with the kitchen sink in there. I mean, I don't particularly care for Star Wars much these days. Other people like it. God love you. You know, that's fine. But it's just, you know, this box set's a piece of crap. It doesn't have the holiday special. Really, you only want it in there to say you've got it. I mean, you probably got it anyway on a bootleg tape that you bought at a convention 15 years ago. So, you know, it's just, I don't give it some sort of retrospective love that it's not as bad as it is. It is as bad as it is.
Yeah. It's got B. Arthur, for our sakes.
There's a reason why George Lucas has not released it is because he knows it is crap.
This is George Lucas we're talking about.
That's all right, Mr. I'll package anything into a new release somewhere, but no, he won't touch that because he knows it's crap. Harrison Ford said it's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
And, you know, Mark Hamill, well, who cares what he says these days after the other day?
No, nobody cares. I really is Star Wars. It's just getting on my nerves. The stats for the new movie, it's like, oh, look, there's walkers. Ooh, it's got a Death Star. It's the original Death Star.
I still haven't seen The Force Awakens.
What is it showing me that's new?
Yeah, I still haven't seen The Force. I haven't seen it still. I can't commit 2 and a bit hours to watching it. I don't know. It's just me.
You're not missing anything. I saw it once because I had an afternoon to kill. I wasn't in the mood to see the DiCaprio movie where he wanders around the woods. And
if you want to see the cast of The Raid not doing anything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. So I went to see The Force Awakens, and I was just like, oh, it's okay, but boy, there's a lot of missed opportunity, and it's so full of cliches. And everything. I mean, we talked about it with Paul Bishop, of all people.
Yeah.
He was pointing out all this stuff. And then I saw it again because we wanted to take my son to see it, and I had seen it, so I said it's okay for him to see it. So I went with him one afternoon to check it out. And to tell you the truth, my son is would tell you that he would rather watch an Abbott and Costello movie than Star Wars. And he's in the first grade. So.
He'd rather watch Ultraman, right?
Yeah. He'd rather watch Ultra 7 or Ultraman. It made no real, like, obsessive impression on him. And I'm glad. Like, I don't want him to grow up being this mark for an outdated sci-fi franchise. That's one of the reasons movies suck so bad today. So.
My kids.
Yeah, it's fine. It's just like, it's okay if he watches it and enjoys it. I'll take him to see the next one, but I don't want him to be like, oh, yeah, these are the greatest movies ever made, and, you know, we're going to all speak Wookiee in 10 years the way these people are. You know, I don't get it. I don't get the obsession with it. There's so many more impressive films in the history of movies. Even for the sci-fi fantasy stuff, I'd rather watch old Ray Harryhausen Sinbad movies, and so would my son. And maybe it's the way I raised him, but it's just his... It doesn't resonate with him. Star Wars just doesn't resonate with him. It's
like Jason the Argonauts, where it's got like a thing coming out of the sea. Yeah, right. I ain't watching that.
He liked Jason the Argonauts. He loves the Sinbad movies. It's just like that's more appealing to him. And
he loves
it might
movies
be because
things come out of the water.
Oh.
Yeah, it's like we raise them on things that don't have quick takes and aren't edited like MTV video and stuff.
I swear to God. Like, on the day of my birthday a couple of weeks back, you know, I was like, all these posts come out, happy birthday, Stuart. Fucking Garrow puts one of the Kraken coming out of the sea picture on there. I'm like, you bastard, seriously. I did not even expect that coming. I was like, oh, Garrow, is it on your timeline? I see the Kraken. I'm like, oh, there goes my day completely shot to bits. bastard Garrow.
I have to release the Kraken score.
I just think about Clash of the Titans and I just, oh, God.
Yeah, I have no interest in showing him that. It's got nudity. He's not quite ready to see yet. That one's actually like...
Okay, so you don't want to show your son the nudity. You don't mind him seeing Medusa, which is scary as all hell.
I don't know if I want him to see Medusa either. I think Medusa might be just...
Oh, Medusa would creep him the hell out. I'm 45 and it creeps me the hell out. Oh, yeah, it is. It's fantastic looking, Yeah, not the Kraken.
Kraken was a bit of a disappointment, but Medusa, I thought, was phenomenal. It's one of his best works. It's the only reason I watched the movie, really.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, but certainly not for that fucking owl.
No. But anyway, all right, well, let's wind it up. This won't be the last of the best of British that we cover. We'll do some more in the future and cover some other shows. I'm thinking I was toying around with The Goodies. An episode of that. You guys ever heard of that?
I've heard of it. Haven't seen it.
Hunter?
Mm-mm. Nope.
Oh boy, wow. You're in for a treat with that one. That show's incredible. The Goodies are probably an episode of Some Mothers Do Have Them. I don't know. There's plenty out there. There's plenty of them. So I would have to sort of delve into the bag of British comedy shows and see what we can pull out for next time. But anyway, like I said...
Kenny Everett? You want to do a Kenny Everett show?
We can do a Kenny Everett show, but Kenny Everett's more just skits.
Yeah, it is. I don't, and sometimes the skits just get cut short before they even fail.
I did watch the best. When I went away on holiday with the family in June, I did take a few DVDs with me to our holiday home, and I did take the best of Kenny Everett. And it's like, yeah, some of these skits fall flat, and some are really funny. It's like the brotherly love ones are always funny, but some of the other ones are just jokes that fall flat. And yeah. Kenny Everett might be a bit of a mixed bag. I think we do Kenny Everett. We might do that Bloodbath for the House of Death film.
Yeah, might get a hold of that. I don't know if it's available anywhere.
It's on DVD in the UK. And,
okay.
I was hoping Umbrella would put it out over here, but they haven't. But
have you dropped by the Umbrella offices to talk to them about that?
I gather that's a snarky remark, because I was there the other day, smart. You know I was there. I got to say, like, I went to...
Did you make a suggestion?
Well, I tell you what, you would have pulled a boner because there was like about 25 copies of The Man from Hong Kong on Blu-ray, like about 3 feet away from me on their shelf.
Put a stain in the drawers, sure.
Yeah, I'm sure you would. And but no, it's pretty cool. It's not a massive place. It's just a small, office, you know, apartment. Their major warehouse apparently is in New South Wales, but they do stock quite a few titles here in Victoria. But yeah, no, it was cool going to Umbrella and having a look around there. The girl showed me around. Ah, she let me take a picture for you as well, John. So I said, oh, some friends of mine in the US would be pretty jealous. She goes, take a picture and send it to them. I said, oh, okay, I will. So I'll have to...
I should mention that that's on Amazon.com. U.S. Amazon is actually carrying that Umbrella release because I guess it's playable on U.S. Blu-ray players.
What, The Man from Hong Kong?
Yeah.
Yeah, usually...
selling it for $33.
I can't see... I've never heard of an Umbrella title being region locked. I think they just do region free. A lot of the people who work in there are very much just film fans who get to design, you know, custom covers and secure the rights and put them out. So they know all about region locking. I don't think they do it. I don't think I've ever seen one that is region locked from memory. So
yeah, their releases are extremely. It is like fans are doing the releases.
Oh, they're totally. Like
their department.
Well, you look at the people in there.
The Xbox set was mind-blowing.
Yeah. Well, that's it. You look at the, I mean, I saw some of the people working there, just like, you know, people from all walks of life, like younger folks, older folks. So it's not just bogged down with, say, the younger ones who just want to pick stuff from 1990 onwards. It's also some of the older guys who are like, hey, this TV show, we can get the rights to this. Let's put this out, sort of thing. So, yeah, it was really interesting going for a look in there. Well, enjoyed it. And they were very friendly as well. Thanks to Antoinette in there for hooking me up with that All Together Now box set for cheap. Very nice. Very cool. All right. Well, we'll say good night and goodbye and adios and all sort of stuff. And any plugs, Hannah?
Nope. You know, just keep your ear to the ground for some stuff coming up in the future.
That's right.
And, yeah. Just got. I recorded some stuff this week that, you know, some listeners will know is probably coming, long-time listeners, but,
yeah,
you know, we'll announce more soon.
That's right. And we're already getting requests for Rock Month, even though we're, like, about 8 months away.
Yeah, I know. People are like, next Rock Month, do this. Well, like,
yeah. Always good to plan ahead, I guess.
Yeah. No, keep them coming.
Oh, Yeah. Keep the requests coming. We can't guarantee that we're going to do them all because, you know, Rock Month's pretty sacred to us. We only get one pick each and then a collective one, so... Yeah, it's kind of tough to narrow it down to everybody's liking. But,
When people suggest shows, it can lead to other ideas.
It really can. Like, you don't expect that we would just say, nah. Sometimes we will say no. Like, sometimes we'll say, look, you know, John, you may have covered it back on old podcasts that doesn't exist anymore. Or we might have, Hunter and I might have covered it a few years back in the BJ era. You know, not everybody's heard all the old shows because there's that many of them. But keep requests coming. Look, all we're going to say is don't ask for the obvious ones. We pretty much don't run that way. You know, 99% of the time, it's not. We don't do the obvious, as you've guessed. Yeah, so sort of, you're going to ask for like...
Unless it's you too. We're going to do you too. It's going to happen.
I'm yeah. If you're going to ask for like a Lethal Weapon show, probably not going to happen. No.
No,
just, you know, there is other places for that. We'd like to sort of turn you on to other ones. Because, I mean...
But we will do Loaded Weapon 1. We'll do that.
That film still makes me laugh. Look, say all you want. That film still cracks me up.
Hey, I don't mind it.
Yeah, it does make me laugh. It's like, wow, all these years later, it's the jokes still hold up. So that's, you know... Yeah, who knows? It may happen one day. But, all right, fellas. What?
One last thing. There was an Elroy screening the other night, and everybody, of course, is scared to death to ask him questions. He's going to rip their head off or something. So I just asked him to lighten the mood. I said, "Let's get out on the internet." It is now. I go, "Your favorite Columbo villain?" And he looked at me trying to hold back a laugh because he knew what I was doing. And he went, "Trish Van Devere."
Really?
And he said, "In that episode, they have such chemistry that you almost feel like she could take Columbo away from his wife."
From the fictitious Mrs. Columbo, who we never see, except for that horrible
spin-off series. Yeah. And it's like, he said that's his favorite one. That completely surprised him.
Did you say to him, hey, Israel, Mr. Elroy, Israel?
Yeah, yes, I did.
Yeah.
He said a lot of things in Chloe. In fact, when I got there, he's all excited to see me. And
oh, honey, that's priceless. He's excited to see John.
Yeah.
Well, the world's greatest crime writers decided to see John. That's classic.
Hilarious. And then he pulls. He sits next to me and goes, "John, we won." because he hasn't been gloating about the election to anybody. His wife won't allow him to do it, and so he's just, John, we won. Yeah. And then we were just talking about the election and everything.
Oh,
and, he told me some interesting stuff. I guess he knows the editor of the New Yorker. And that guy was on the plane with Obama on Air Force One a couple of months ago before the election. And he says, oh, you think Hillary got this? And he just looked at him and went, nope.
Oh, wow.
Obama. Wow. Yeah, I was blown away. So, like,
that's something.
You know, internal track. They do internal polling, and they know really beforehand how things are going to go. They don't tell the media, obviously, and leak it out. But
let's not get off on a tangent, but let's real quick, I've got to ask this question. Do you reckon Obama's going to pardon Hillary? I'm going to say no. I'm actually going to say no now. I was thinking for sure.
There's going to be a quiet agreement that Trump won't prosecute. And it'll be he said he won't pursue. There's going to be some sort of quiet deal worked out. Because it's not going to do anybody any good, even if they prosecute her. And I'd love to see it happen. It's unnecessary. It's like her career is over. That's it for the Clintons. Forget them. You know, they're done.
Well, had she not come back with this stupid recount with that idiot Jill Stein, if she had said, look, I don't want nothing to do with this, I'm accepting the results, then, yeah, I would probably say, look, Trump probably won't prosecute her. But now she had to stick her fucking nose in. I'm like, you're an idiot. What are you proving with this? I brought up the Hunter last week and Trinity as well. I said, look, I'm really worried about this. And Hunter's gone, not going to happen. It won't. I'm worried that it's going to change, that it's going to be overturned and given to Hillary. And he's like, nah. Hunter's gone, nah. Don't worry about it. It's not going to happen. And now I'm reading, like, I'm watching news, I'm watching Hannity, and that's like, nah, I can't. It's not going to happen.
No, it isn't going to happen. It's all PR. I think Zolly Becker had pointed out that she had raised so much money, she still hasn't spent it all. And so this is like an excuse to spend the money.
Well, she was saying
she can't keep it.
Well, she only needs $2.2 million to do a recount in all three states. And she's already raised like $7 million. And all the rest of it's gone to the Greens Party. So she's obviously feeding on the people who just desperately want some sort of overturned decision to happen,
right,
which can't happen. You know, and like I said, I was one of the ones that thought, holy shit, Trump may lose everything, but no, from what I'm seeing now,
it's not going to happen. They just do that. It's posturing for their voters.
And they're even saying, like, they're even trying to influence, you know, the electoral voters to change the decision. And apparently there's a guy talking who is an electoral voter in Michigan, I think it was, who said, you can't, once you voted, you can't change it. It's illegal to actually change it. So, yeah, it's all done.
Yeah.
And when I'm hearing things like...
It's being reported by media. You know, you got to understand, the media doesn't really understand the law or pretends not to.
Yeah.
So it's like a lot of this is just, it's fake news, as we would call it.
Well, if I'm seeing nothing about Trump worrying or Pence worrying about a possibility of an overturned decision, then I'm not going to worry as well.
No, it's not going to happen.
Nice.
There are security clearances. It's like...
It's make-believe, you know, like let's make them feel better for a little while. That's all.
Yeah,
and Jill Stein can rent seek off. Jill Stein will rent seek off of it. That's when, you know.
Yeah. All right. Well, now we cleared the air about that, and I feel a bit more better. We'll say good night. So say good night, boys.
Adios.
Thank you for listening to the Midnight Movie Cowboys. For more information, go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com. For feedback, comments, or show suggestions, go to midnightmoviecowboys@gmail.com. Like what you hear? Head on over to iTunes and leave us a review. Hear us on Stitcher Radio. Head over to Stitcher.com and download the app. Want to help the show out? Head on over to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and hit the PayPal donate. We appreciate all donations of any denomination. Find us on Twitter at MMCowboys. Like us on Facebook. Head over to Facebook.com.
type in Midnight Movie Cowboys. Hit the like button over there. Want to friend us personally on Facebook or follow us on Twitter? Go to www.midnightmoviecowboys.com and find the links from there on the right-hand side. Thanks for listening. See you all next week.